Hello, this is Squiggy and the Boys with Jack Cahill, Eric Barcelona, and Peter Viz. We will be discussing the events from chapters 1 through 3 of the book Slaughterhouse-5.
All right, so we're here, Squiggy and the Boys, welcome. And we're going to be talking about Slaughterhouse-5 by Kurt Vonnegut. And primarily chapters 1 through 3 in this episode. And first, we're going to touch on the toll. Actually, no, we're going to talk about the destruction of countries and, you know, what that, all about that. So, yeah. So, Jack, if you want to take it from here, if you want to start that off.
Yeah, I mean, as we're reading this, these first three chapters of the book, we quickly understand that, obviously, Germany has been destroyed thoroughly throughout the whole war, especially once the Soviets turn on them. We know that it's been kind of a nightmare for them ever at this point in the war. From Billy's point of view, he's really struggling psychologically at this point. He's really not in a good state of mind. And I think a lot of that has to do with the destruction that he's feeling. Clearly at, in the second chapter of the book, when it's more modern time, he's really, experiencing some PTSD. Mm-hmm. It sounds like. What do you think, Squiggy?
Yeah, I really feel that the, destruction that is consuming Germany at this time, much of it, like with Dresden, it didn't really need to happen. And that sometimes destruction is needed with war, and that's the only way that you can really ensure that this will never happen again. But, and then there's also the cases like here that we see in the book, this didn't need to happen, and people didn't need to die, but yet they still were being killed. And that even sometimes in war, the good guys can be the just as worse as the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And this leads into the third section about the PTSD that people go through. And there was a certain part in chapter one where Kurt talks about his story and how he like makes these drawings, and he can't really fully explain, you know, what he went through, but like, he just keeps thinking about all the firebombing and the destruction and everything that's going on. So it really does take a toll on the people doing it. Like, just as much, not just as much, but a decent amount as much as it does the people that it actually happened to. So,
yeah, I mean, I agree with both you guys completely. I mean, I think you could have the debate for hours of whether the bombing of Dresden was necessary. I don't know about you guys, but I really could see it from both sides of why it would and wouldn't be. Because on one hand, the Germans did terrible things to other countries by invading them, and to the Jews with the mass murdering and whatnot. So, yeah, I really could see it from both sides. And the U.S. trying to get them back for what they've done, even though it wasn't really necessarily the U.S.'s place. I really understand the British side of it. But, I mean, I understand the U.S. being more mad at Japan than Germany at this time, because Pearl Harbor and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the morality standpoint, I'm really unsure if it was necessary or not. What do you guys think?
I don't think it was necessary. It kind of like reminds me of like, even like Japan too, just like stuff like that. They just like completely obliterated it. And I don't think that's necessary. It really just like shows how much power you have. It doesn't really do anything productive. It doesn't fix anything. It's just overkill, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. Squiggy, what do you think?
There's sometimes people will say all is fair in war. You know, whatever you got to do, you have to do in order to ensure victory. But I think like in cases like of this, it just was completely unnecessary, because at this point, Germany was in full retreat and surrender mode. And this wasn't, as we've learned, this city, this area was no strategic area for the Germans at all. They weren't doing anything to benefit the army. So this was pretty much rubbing in their face at this point. And also, it begs the question, like, was this kind of a payback move or a revenge move to the Germans by the Allied forces? Because they were kind of, you know, a little hurt by all what they were doing to them. And they kind of just wanted, a little payback from all the stuff they'd been going through for the past, 4 to 6 years. So they, at this point, were just probably at their last straw. They just wanted to do something, to shove it in the Germans' face. But yeah. Pretty much overall, this didn't really need to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I see where you're both coming from. I think, should we move on to section two?
Yeah, I think we should, because it kind of leads into the morality standpoint. And we actually have an interview with Brother Joe that we did, who actually is a really good, source of, because he's a brother and he, knows a lot about this stuff. And so we should lead into that right now.
All right, let's do it. This is Jack from Squiggy and the Boys. I'm here with Brother Joe Ruiz from St. Rita, discussing the morality of Slaughterhouse 5. Brother Joe, glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Can you explain to us the cruelty of being a prisoner of war from a morality standpoint?
The cruelty?
Yeah.
Of being a prisoner of war?
Yes.
Perhaps there's a lack of food, a big human basic need. It's psychological torture, I would imagine. Again, it's against human dignity, not treating the individual with respect and, again, providing them the basic needs. So it's psychological, it's physical, hunger, thirst. I don't know. I can only imagine, when one is a prisoner of war, what the enemy does to that person. I don't know. So it could be any number of things, but yet that's, for me, that's wrong. I mean, we're called to, as a Christian, we're called to love one another, love our enemies, but it seemed to be very complex that if you're in war and you're fighting your enemies, how can you really love your enemies, I think that would be very difficult.
Yeah, so in our book that we are reading, Slaughterhouse 5, a character in the book has his shoes taken by the German guards, so the Germans have better shoes, and he has to walk around a train factory, so on coals, on sharp rocks, that kind of stuff, with no shoes, to the point where his feet are bleeding. Can you explain to us what that might cause a person from a psychological standpoint?
Every human being, feet are very important, because we get from one place to another with our feet, and if we can't get from one place to another without our feet, that's a challenge. And feet are essential, I guess. My experience, for example, I did the Grand Canyon hike, and I walked from the rim down to the bottom and then back up, and on the way back up, my feet were incredibly tired, and I knew that if I didn't keep pressing to the rim, the day was gonna, night was gonna come, and I didn't have no flashlight or anything. And so I was afraid of not making it to the rim and then walking in the dark. And my feet were, they were killing me. And so psychologically I'm thinking, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it? Am I going to survive? Am I going to make it on the top? But my feet were on my mind, the pain, the suffering.
Yes. So the main character in our book, he has endured a lot of psychological torture throughout his life, including mistreatment from his parents, mistreatment from superiors. His wife has died. He's always been victimized. And at this point in his life, he has a lot of time shifting. So he believes he's in one place. When he sees himself in the future, he goes back in the past. How does being a prisoner of war and going through treatment like that, how can that cause time shifts or other psychological damage?
I think if one doesn't attend to the psychological issues that one has, it gets worse. One begins to, that repression and that sense of recycling your own past and experiences, you know, it just keeps recycling and keeps recycling, that I think it really distorts the person, their own self-confidence, their own self-esteem. You know, they lose a sense of hope, and it's like a buildup, and sometimes that buildup can explode or implode. And so
last question for you. Obviously, we go to a Catholic school. We're Catholic school students. And our book is about the bombing of Dresden. It's similar to the bombing of Hiroshima, kind of uncalled for. The war was almost over. Can you explain to us how, as Christians, we should view that today? How we could view that as immoral, or and why?
Immoral in the sense that there are a lot of innocent people killed. I mean, we had to go to a drastic way of making a statement by really destroying humanity, even the most innocent.
Yes.
And I know again that when it comes to war, it's a very complex, complicated issue, you know? And as a Christian and believing, you know, that we should respect human life, humankind, and we should always strive our best to, if there is conflict, either among countries or among peoples or cultures, that we try to strive to, you know, diplomacy or some way of collaborating where we can make peace of some sort. But at the same time, I understand people can be so cruel, and they won't really care if you want to collaborate or participate in any kind of diplomatic resolution. And so what do you do?
The Germans obviously mistreated Jews, were doing horrible things themselves. As Americans, should we view this as a just act, or should we view this as something immoral that we should try to, like, get out of our history?
A just act? You mean like that?
Like they deserved it almost.
Who, the Jews?
The Germans.
The Germans.
When we bombed Dresden. Because obviously they did some horrible things themselves.
They did. So are you saying in a way that it's payback?
Yes. Should we view it as that, or should we view it as something that is immoral that we should regret? Or should we view it as something that they deserved? In your opinion.
In as a person?
Yes, as a brother.
As a human being, human person.
Yes.
I know that my personal reaction would be, you know, they deserve it for the atrocities that they've committed.
Yes.
Right? But at the same time, as a Christian and what I've been taught as a Christian, again, respecting human life, human dignity, you know, I'm for that too. Could we have not bombed them and still punished him in a different way? I think. Again, I can only imagine because I've never been in that context. And so, it's, that's, I guess I kind of sit in between right now.
Yes.
You know, I have my views of what we, my Christian understanding on respecting of human life, but then at the same time, how do you defeat an evil? And by doing, how, and in defeating an evil, do we have to go to that extent of termination or extermination?
Yeah. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Jack. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that was some wise words there from Brother Joe. Special thanks to him for joining us today. That's going to lead us into our next section about torment and psychological problems after and during the war. So clearly Billy, when he becomes a POW and probably even a little bit suicidal and weary, mistreats him quite a bit, always is yelling at him, saying that Weary's always saving his life, which he's probably right about. Weary does save his life quite a bit, but he makes Billy feel very guilty about it. So obviously not the kindest thing for Weary to do there, but yeah, obviously it's very clear to tell both before or not before, but during and after the war, Billy is pretty messed up with all this PTSD. And I don't blame him. He starts out as an assistant chaplain, wasn't expecting to go into battle at all. And next thing you know, months later, he's a POW in Germany, one of the most violent, gruesome wars in the history of the world.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy how he actually, like, recovered from his first, like right after the war, he recovered. And then this, like, plane crash happened, and then he just started to, like, get even worse. And it just kind of didn't help anything when it came to, like the same thing with, like, the bombing and all that stuff. It kind of reminded him of it. And then he starts talking about this, like, alien abduction thing, which was just kind of weird to me. And I actually have this quote here, because he would, like, constantly wake up and, like, wake up in a different place. He would just keep thinking, like, having these, like, flashbacks and stuff behind enemy lines and all that. And Vonnegut writes, Billy is spastic in time, has no control where he is going next, and the trips aren't necessarily fun. He is in a constant state of stage fright, he says, because he never knows what part of his life he is going to have to act in next. And that kind of just, like, really sums it up for, like, people with PTSD and what they go through after the war.
Yeah,
Squiggy, what do you think?
I think with, like, in the first couple pages of the book, he's talking about how he'd, like, this is, like, after he got home, and this is, like, in the 60s, and he talks about he would drink a lot, and then he would drunkenly call one of his, like, his guys he knew from the war, and it was usually his buddy, Bernard V. O'Hare, which is a guy he went through much of the war with, and who he also got captured and was a POW with, and this was right when he was first starting this book, Slaughterhouse-5, and he mentions how, one, that O'Hare said he couldn't really remember much. That might just be because of, like, his memory, and it might not be good, or he might be trying to forget it, and that he's trying to not really, like, have that part of his life. And it says how it was, like, just the middle of the night, and he was reading, and that could also be a form of his, like, he couldn't sleep because of, like, the flashbacks and the PTSD of the war. And unlike Billy, he's using drinking to cope with his experiences from the war. Billy could be using reading just because he can't really sleep, so he has to do something, and he's not really abusive of it. But Billy says how he can't really remember much from the war, but he'll try to help him write this book. But that could just be him, like, you know, not really trying to remember all this, because war can have unmeasurable effects on men and the people that are in it. And, you know, like Eric said, a plane crash can, you know, jumpstart it all, even though if, like, you might have forgotten it for, like, 10 years. Anything, something resembling the war, what you went through, can re-trigger it, and that can, you know, put you in a downward spiral worse than it, you know, originally was.
Yeah, and I think today it's very different with PTSD because the symptoms seem like they're more obvious, especially for people coming back home and they start to develop these drinking problems. I read a story recently about a guy who his grandfather started having symptoms of PTSD when he was about 21, and he wasn't diagnosed until he was about 58 years old. This kid is also a veteran, and he was diagnosed almost immediately, and that was the encouragement for his grandfather to start getting his health checked out, and it was very obvious for the doctors to notice that his grandfather did have PTSD. And his symptoms were obvious. You know, he came back from the war, started being a substance abuser, much more quiet than he was before. And he had a little bit more mysterious way about him as before compared to the war, which is when he was more fun, outgoing, and lively. And he came back from Korea as, you know, a quiet, mysterious, kind of shy guy.
Yeah, what's kind of like outstanding to me is that it mentions how they have to cope with their own, like, what happened to them in their own way. So, like, he'll read or, like, they'll drink. But, like, I rarely ever see, like, an instance, like, where, like, they actually get, like professional help to actually, like, fix what's going on. And it, like they go through recovery, but it's not like they – if it happens again, I see a lot of, like, stories and stuff where people are veterans and they just get, like, thrown back into the normal world. And they can't really adjust to it. So PTSD just forms and just, like, makes them go nuts, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's really apparent in our life, especially today, that our support for veterans is terrible, especially when they get back home. The medical service is obsolete. There's not many veterans hospitals anywhere. I mean, I think we have one in Chicago. And I think obviously it has to improve. And especially around this time for Billy, there probably was hardly any veterans hospitals. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the problem for Billy. And that's probably why he's having these delusions and all the flashbacks. And I think that's a big contributor to his problem is the lack of resources that he has to get diagnosed with PTSD.
Right.
Yeah. Squiggy, you got any take on this?
Yeah, kind of like with Billy, like you had veterans like coming back to the you know, like America's greatest generation coming back from the war, you know, after liberating Europe from like tyranny, and they did, like you guys mentioned, they didn't even know really much about PTSD or like the effects that war had, even though they had, you know, people 20 years ago come back from the First World War, and you know, before that, you know, the Civil War and all that. So this was the first real one because the modern technology finally caught up with all these people, and it finally was really affecting them in the way that they, you know, lived out their lives. But they, like Jack said, they were just, you know, emerged into society and expected, you know, to live out their lives, even though, you know, a month, you know, a year ago they were, you know, fighting, you know, crossing the lands of, you know, plains of Japan or, you know, crossing through the fields of Germany, and then, you know, months later, they're just plopped down at a desk, you know, like they're going back to their job they had beforehand. And the people, they're expected to, you know, just, you know, go about their business and act like nothing really had happened. They had just taken a 4-year break from work, you know, mm-hmm. to do something else. But, you know, that really isn't how it should be. And that's not really, you know, a good way to help these people. And it really, you know, it really affects them. And it really affected a lot of people in, you know, negative ways.
Right.
Yeah. I think that might be a good stopping point for today's podcast.
Right.
Next
week we'll be talking about chapters 4 through 7, and we will take it back up next week. And so this has been Squiggy and the Boys, Peter Viz as Squiggy, and myself, Eric Barcelona, and Jack Cahill as the Boys. So we will see you guys next week on Squiggy and the Boys.
All right.